All right, so I guess we can start right now for my talk, GSM TechBurden-3, the long-awaited successor. By the way, I am Shinjo Park, and I'm currently working on GSM-K, and I am doing this and that for the mobile network security. Today's talk consists of the current status of GSM-TEP, and I want to discuss two main questions: what should GSM TechBurden-3 should encapsulate, and how should GSM TechBurden-3 package to be constructed? I also expect a discussion, not only after this talk, but I also want to listen about who are the users of GSM-TEP, and what should be considered inside the GSM-TEP. Well, this is my brief introduction, where probably you know, probably we had an introduction round in the very beginning. Well, I'm actually interested in free software in general. When I was still in university, I believed the cause public money and public code, and that is one of the main motivation of opening up the ESCAD, which I have implemented during which I started developing when I was still in university, and I did my PhD, and it is still maintained in the GitHub repository. So GSM TechBurden-3 is where somebody would say that this is yet another Half-Life 3 of the Osmocom, and I even thought that this might be ended up as something like a Half-Life 3, but I hope that it won't end up like what did in Half-Life 3. I hope, and I really don't know what Valve is doing, and looks like they have some issues regarding the number 3, by the way. And so why I'm proposing the GSM TechBurden-3? So, when Harald and co. was designing the GSM TechBurden-1 and 2, maybe it was internally used on the Osmocom to encapsulate the GSM radio packets in the UDP format. But there are also non-Osmocom users of the GSM TechBurden-2, and tada, and LTE and NR also came here. And some people, including me, thought that, oh, there is an existing standard of GSM-TEP, and why cannot we utilize the existing standard to encapsulate the newer radio messages? But the GSM-TEP is designed in the GSM in the mind, and the size of metadata is quite smaller in some cases. For example, there is a 16-bit field storing the ARFCN field, but this is not enough for storing the LTE and the 5G ARFCNs, because they are already bigger than 32768. And also things like non-LTE RRC or LTE NAS or even LTE Max, they got added step by step way, rather than structurally adding all the required data types at once. And well, there were discussions so far, and even I can trace back the GSM TechBurden-3 discussion back in 2017 or 2016 or something. But well, nothing happened until this moment to yet to build a formal proposal or formal specification, and I hope that this will be changed today or in this event. There have been some stopgap solutions to encapsulate 4G and the 5G packets inside the GSM-TEP and or any other methods. And there are some examples, like using the user DLTs of the Wireshark, and one of the example I would say is the SRS-RENs 4G and 5G information. I checked the documentation, and it is using the user DLTs for nearly everything. And in case of SRS-LTE's 4G implementation, there is an option to store the MAC packets inside one of the user DLT, and for the SRS EPC, there is also an option to encapsulate the S1AP packets inside the user DLT. And also I checked the SRS-RENs 5G implementation, and there are basically quite a lot of user DLTs for every layer of the RF implementation, like starting from MAC, and RRC, PDCP, and RRC-NAS, and also some OpenRAN-related packets, which I found it quite crazy, but I think it should be useful for some purposes. But user DLTS, they cannot substitute GSM tab because it is not a real-time one, and the packets must be stored from beginning to the end before they could be opened up into the Wireshark, and then so the users can see the packets. There are some other hacks implemented in some other projects, like the QC Super. While they are using the GSM tab to encapsulate the 2G, 3G, or 4G packets, but I also checked their source code that they wrote a custom protocol which wraps up the NRRC and NRNAS into a UDP-based packet. And there is also another project called Mobile Insight, and they also are using yet another custom protocol to wrap the cellular signaling messages. What I have thought as a requirement for the GSM tab version 3 is that it doesn't need to have to be binary compatible with the GSM tab version 2. And thanks to the latest commit on the Wireshark, then now this sector of the GSM tab will check the GSM tab's version header so we can at least depart from the older GSM tab version 2 format. And we may need to cover all cellular and telecom related protocols, for example, like GSM, WCDMA, LTE, and NR. And I don't know whether we should include the CDMA 2000 sound or not. And there might be a 6G or 7G or something coming up. And I hope that the GSM tab should be quite extensible to cover the further standards. And there are also some non-3GPP based cellular protocols like Tetra or GMR or E1 and T1. And also I have checked that there is an encapsulation for WiMAX is supported also in GSM tab. And there are some other goodies like Osmo core logging or baseband row diagnostics, so far and so on. And I also think that the GSM tab should cover multiple layers, starting from very top NAS to the very bottom in the MAC. And also it should cover the fixed metadata and also dynamic metadata for each protocol's layers. This is the global header of the GSM tab version 3, which I am going to propose today. So there are four very big, at the very beginning, there are four octets. One is the GSM tab version and the header length. And those definitions are following the GSM tab version 2. And it ensures some kind of a compatibility in sense. And the third octet would be the protective type, which I propose to set as 0xFF. Just to make sure that the GSM tab version 2 only implementations do not draw any errors when seeing the GSM tab version 3 packet. And the fourth octet is actually a segmentation, which I didn't thought about when I was preparing for this presentation. But when I was talking to Sprit today's morning, the idea of segmentation came into the later. But I will talk this later on. And there will be a two 16-bit fields for storing the type of the packet and also the subtype of the packet. And there will be a metadata following, and the payload and load will be followed after the metadata. I tried to collect the required type numbers for what type of things, for the what kind of cellular messages should be encapsulated. Like for the GSM, I try to gather what is currently implemented in the GSM tab.net, like the UM interface and UM burst for the air interface, and the ABIS interface inside the core network, and also so the GPRS interfaces like LLC and SNDCP. And please forgive me if I use things wrong, because my main focus is actually above 3G and 4G. And from 3G, LTE, and 4G, and 5G, things got a bit differently organized, such as MAC, RLC, PDCP, RC, and NAS for each generations. And going from 3G to 5G, the name of the air interface has been slightly changed, like UU to LTUU and NRUU. And also there is also a V2X or device-to-device communications, and this is also using the PC5 interface, which I also found the name when I was preparing for this proposal. And there should be also the SIM APDUs carried over the GSM tap packets. I know that the SIM trace is also transmitting the APDUs, which is encapsulated inside the GSM tap packet, and E1/T1 packets or GMR1 UMR interface, and also the Tetra burst interface. I know that there is an Osmo Tetra, and I think that it is also using the GSM tap to store the AR interface, and there could be possibly much more, which I did not mention here. Yes. So the reason why I thought that the type number should be 16 bit is that on one of the recent discussion, Niels actually proposed that why we are not going to use the T16 and L16 format. And because nowadays we have enough storage and do not create any kind of complexities using the just 8-bit and cram everything inside the 8-bit one single octet. So I thought if we have the 16 bits, then why cannot we use the first byte as a big category, and the second octet to point out the specific values, in this example, I thought there could be some categories for the common messages and some non-CGP protocols like Osmo Core Logging or Smart Card APDUs or Baseband Diagnostic Frames and Tetra, WiMAX, GMR, and E1/T1s. And also for the type numbers for each air interfaces used in the inside the GSM. And the GSM is for the GSM numbers might be differently assigned compared to the later generations. And for the 3, 4, 5, I was thinking about, okay, let's use WCDMA, LT, and NR, roughly mapping to 3G, 4G, and 5G. And also use some lower numbers for the known layers like MACPDUs or RLC or PECP, RLC, and NAS. And also there might be some generation specific protocols like WCM, CDMA, FP, or LT and NR positioning protocols, which could be optionally mapped generally encapsulated using the GSM TAP protocol. So this is one of my proposals for how to assign the type numbers and the type numbers in general, and where the subtype numbers will be depending on the exact type itself, but this is something which I will discuss later, and then after going from the type and subtype, then the metadata will be following. And there might be some common, there will be a common metadata for all the GSM tap packets available. Like the first four octets will be the version and header length and protective type and the segmentation, and type and subtype will be following. And there might be some other metadata like the generator's timestamp, where if the generator of the GSM tap packet is not the machine which is running on executable, and the remote entity which is generating some cellular data is keeping its own timestamp, or there might be some sequence numbers which could be used in the segmentation, like the packets having the same sequence number could be considered as a reassembling of the PDUs. And there might be also some type-specific metadata, which I think that I was thinking a mandatory metadata storing some small amount of information, and also so TLB information to store any other metadata which is not specified inside the mandatory metadata section. And I actually like the idea of the using the 16 bits for the both tag and length, because it will likely simplify the implementation. And well, given that if there is a primitives for the 16-bit TLBs inside the Osmo core, then I think we can still use it. And another concern from my side is that whether we should have a dedicated tag in a sense of TLB to indicate the start of the data, or we can just use a header length to indicate that the header and the header is ending in these bytes, and every byte after that header length should be interpreted as a data. So for the NAS layer, I don't think that there will be a lot of metadata required, because the NAS as the name implies, it is non-access stratum, and it does not need to carry any kind of RF metadata information. Although there might be some optional metadata for the ciphering and integrity protection key, because there might be some cryptographic checksum attached, or the NAS metadata NAS PDUs could be ciphered. And I was also thinking about adding on optional keys to decode, decrypt, and check the integrities just based on what is provided as a metadata inside the GSM TAPS header. And for the RRC layer, starting from the 3G, the RRC is constructed as an ASN1 based PDUs, and the only strictly required metadata is what kind of ASN1 PDU is encapsulated inside the packets, like which RRC channel is using is actually required to properly decode the RRC information. And I was also thinking about attaching the lower layer metadata, like frequency information and PCI information, and the synchronization information, like in which system frame number, say subframe number, the RRC signaling message has been transmitted. And in case of the NR, there is also another concept of the subcarrier spacing, which is also required to uniquely identify the FIR cell, because it could be also configured in multiple ways. So I was thinking like this type of RRC metadata, and correct me if I did something wrong, or if something is missing here. Like this information is used for indicating from which cell the RRC information has been transmitted, and in which time slot the RRC messages has been transmitted. And in case of GSM RR, I have copy and pasted the definition coming from the current GSM tab header. And for CG and above, I put something which I consider as an important one. And also for PDCP and the below layers, I also checked the Wireshark destexter source code, and I also try to read the specification to determine which kind of metadata is actually required to properly decode the PDU into the valid channel information. And I check the LTE and at least for the LTE and NRS PDCP, whether the user plane or signaling plane or the RO in case of LTE, whether the PDCP data is ROHC compressed or not is required for Wireshark to correctly detect the PDCP PDUs. And I was also thinking to attaching the similar set of the metadata on which cell the PDCP PDU has been transmitted. And there might be some optional metadata for ciphering key or integrity protection key, because the ciphering and integrity protection is happening on the PDCP layer in case of LTE and the NR. And for the CG, it is implemented a bit differently. The The same goes for the RLC, and I also checked which metadata is required to decode the given RLC PDUs. And I also found out that in case of 3G, the ciphering is actually happening in the RLC layer compared to the LTE and compared to LTE and NR. So in this case, if the ciphering key is available, then I think this should be attached to the RLC layer information. And the same actually also goes for the MAC layers. Here in this case, whether it is a downlink MAC or uplink MAC is required, and what type of RNTI is used for this MAC PDU is required to properly decode a given MAC PDUs. And for the octets for the PDCP and below, I checked the Wireshark dissector, and it has a definition of its tag and value based format for metadata information like the RNTI and others. I don't remember everything correctly, but it looks like it is, seems to be used as a de facto standard, and it looks like it is also likely be used by the non OSMOCOM users like the SRS REN. I think some of the user DLTs are carrying the metadata over the format which Wireshark will going to understand. And one of the questions from my side is that, although it looks like a de facto standard, but I don't think the standard itself is documented. And I checked the Wireshark's documentation, and it looks like something like a de facto standard. And documenting it inside the GSM tab specification, it looks like something like out of scope, or maybe it is required to ensure the interoperability with the Wireshark or any other GSM TAPS implementation. And for the TLB-based metadata, I was also thinking about making the network frequency and cell information not only available as a mandatory metadata, but also it could be made as an additional metadata where it could be attached to the PDUs where normally the metadata is not to be expected. For example, in case of NAS, usually it is not required to attach the channel information, but something like the ciphering and integrated protection key could be optionally attached as a metadata, or additional context information like the generation time or device name or something. And also segmentation metadata could be attached as an optional metadata like the PDU sequence number and total number of segments and the current segment number. And also the additional byte on the very beginning of the GSM tab header could be indicated as whether it is a non-segmented packet or segmented packet or it is the last segment. So the packet metadata like the timestamp or comments or ciphering and integrated protection key could be also coming as a metadata, or radio information like the ARPCN numbers or PSE or PCI numbers or frequency in hertz could be also stored as a metadata. And another question from my side is about the signal status report, which is in the next slide. There is a field for the signal DBM and SNR decibels, and antenna number is in the GSM tab version two header. And as a developer of the SCAD, they are usually decoupled with the RRC or MAC or every PDUs, which is from the baseband diagnostics point of view. There are dedicated diagnostic messages for this signal status report, which is coming in a separate way separately from the RRC or MAC or any other PDUs. And there might be some situation where a dedicated signal status report packet might be useful. And also the multi-carrier or MIMO configuration, then storing every signal status report in one single data structure might not be so feasible, in my opinion. So this is one of the reasons why I think that there might be that if we can define a, a dedicated signal status report payload inside the GSMTAP header. It could be useful in some of the applications. Another question is that whether we should carry, we should support the WiMAX in GSMTAP version 3. I check, and I also checked the documents from the WiMAX forum. Luckily, they are still alive. I did not expect it that the WiMAX forum is still alive. And well, there were several WiMAX networks, but they were gradually shutting down after the TD-LTE and the 5G has been deployed. And as from my understanding, there are no open source implementation of either mobile WiMAX or the stationary WiMAX. And I don't know whether there is an external users of the GSMTAP encapsulating the WiMAX packets. And if nobody can generate or archive the GSMTAP and TAP's WiMAX data, then it might be not required for the archival purposes. And although I have mentioned about the CDMA 2000, but also the CDMA networks were shutting down in USA and also in Korea and probably in some other countries. And then the GSMTAP had never included any kind of support for the CDMA 2000 from the first place. So although I put on the slides, but I am still skeptical on whether to extend the GSMTAP for storing such formats. And for the segmentation, there might be some LTE or 5G MIMO configuration where the MAC PDUs or any other PDUs could be much more larger than a single MTU of 15, 14 bytes. And I only got to know about that today. And also in case of LTE, there are certain control plane messages, like namely the UEK public information. It was small enough to be contained in the 15, 14, and 14 bytes, but ever since the carrier aggregation and LTE advanced had been introduced, the UEK public information of the LTE devices are getting much more larger and larger. And I have also seen some examples where the UEK public information is even bigger than the normal MTU of the Ethernet interface. So I thought that the segmentation of inside the GSMTAP might be a good idea, like this type of metadata, like the PDU IDs for the grouping and number of the segment, total segments and the current segment number. This is my proposal of GSMTAP version 3. And although we still have about 10 to 15 minutes, but I don't want to, this is everything from my side, but I am actually open for discussions for how the GSMTAP version 3 should be designed.
Well, thanks for the presentation. I'm going to hand over to Niels soon. I have a couple of comments, initially just random based on what you stated. Maybe go from backwards to the beginning. So at the end, you cover the segmentation. I personally think it's unneeded complexity. You can just have fragmented IPs and let Wireshark reassemble the IP or let whatever IP stack reassemble it. So 64K is the maximum size of an IP data payload. Mm-hmm. And I think that should be large enough and we shouldn't reinvent the wheel there to have yet another layer of segmentation and reassembly and that we need to maintain and implement and so on. Mm-hmm. So that's for the segmentation. For the question of size, I think is maybe more critical with the header length, where we have a single octet in counting in 32-bit words. So that means the TLV section can never be larger than 1,024 bytes. Mm-hmm. That I think may be too constrained. We don't know what number of metadata, whatever people want to add there. So I would prefer a situation where we have where we overcome this. I mean, I have some ideas, but we don't need to go into the detail now about this. Mm-hmm. That I think might be a constraint. And yeah, maybe I'll give it back to you to comment on that first.
Yes. So if the segmentation is not needed to be implemented on the GSM PEP layer, then the reason why I use this thing is that for the sake of the GSM PEP version 2 only implementation compatibility, because the third octet is interpreted as a type. And although I think that the length could be also extended into the 16 bits, but not using the octet number 2 and octet number 4 feels like somewhat unnatural. And if you think that it is okay to just break the GSM TEP version 2 only implementation and just use the very very first byte to differentiate the packet's version, then extending the header length to take the two octets could make sense. It will also extend the numbers of how many TLBs could come into the GSM TEP header, and I think this will be more maybe some will depend on how much compatibility we should going to provide.
Yeah, I don't think compatibility really is such a concern. I mean, I have some other idea, but I think that we'll probably go into too much detail on how to discuss this in general. Mm-hmm. I just think it's a good idea to think of larger TLVs there. One question though, and then I'm going to hand over to Niels, sorry for the long wait, is you have this idea of putting key material in metadata.
Yes.
But surely you do not think every PDU should have repeated the key all the time, right? So it's like when you assign a new key, you would add that metadata and it would be valid for that logical channel until a sort of new key is
added. That's something which I'm thinking.
Yeah, okay. That makes more sense. Niels.
Niels was the next one.
Yes, I would like to know where can I look at this proposal and maybe comment on it. Do you have like a Garrett patch proposal or a wiki page or a post on a mailing list?
An issue?
Okay, so after maybe after today, I will send this presentation to Harald, so you can upload into somewhere, and I will also try to write some documented form of this proposal. Hopefully within some days, so my question also here is that up to which form should I provide in this stage, should I provide some of the definition of the octets, or should I write some C header, some C APIs for handling the GSM TEP version C data, or which thing would be better option? Just some documentation should be enough.
Hi.
Sorry. You gave it back to me.
I mean, I personally very much like the C struct kind of definitions of data types, but also. Like also, of course, like the lists of what value ranges you assign to what, if that's not in the structs.
Okay, yeah, that sounds perfect. Then I can prepare the document.
Yeah. So you said that for every type of data, you would have like a mandatory a fixed set of data that are required to some type to interpret it correctly, but I'm wondering if it's for instance this I agree that for some of these data to interpret the payload they might be needed, but just because they might be needed to interpret the data doesn't mean that they'll be available. If you dump a GSM tap from the BTS process, of course you will have access to them. If you're dumping it from capturing of the air some of these value, you just won't have them, and you need to fill something in that field. So I'm wondering if it's useful to have either special value defined as unknown or a bit field that says, okay, that metadata is present and valid, or if I have nothing to
put in there. That's actually a good point. So there, so in the case of GSM ARFCN, I was actually surprised that the ARFCN 0 is actually a valid ARFCN, and that or the same also applies to the PCI values for LTE and NR, where the PCI 0 is also a valid ones. And from my understanding, the current version of the GSM tab does not distinguish between those two values, like zero and null. So yes, I will also consider that to use like 0xFF or 0xFFFF to indicate that the value is invalid or not existing, and in order to distinguish that from zeros. That's good point.
I saw in your slides that you mentioned that the DLT is not real time. What do you mean by that?
Yes. So DLT is not real time. It's meant that I check the current SRS length implementation, and if I enable the capture MAC packet storage on the SRS length side, then from what I have understood, it will try to save every packet into the PCAP file, and only after the PCAP file has been finalized, then it will be opened up by Wireshark. And also in the network scenario, like the packet, the machine generating the GSM tab packet is different from what the machine which is accepting the GSM tab packet. Then it will be transmitted through the IP packets. And from what I have understanding, the user DLTs are not meant to be used over the IP network. That's please correct me if I am wrong.
I see. Okay. Thanks.
Yeah, so that's actually the reason why I came up, I think one of the key reasons why I came up with GSM tab in the beginning, because very early during development of the OsmoCom 2G stuff, I mean, you want to see what's happening in real time, like as in if I press a button here, if I make a call, I want to see what's happening right now. I don't want to start a scenario, capture data, then stop the scenario, then open the file, then see what I did a minute before. That's like super slow, and it would drive me crazy for development to not see that in real time streaming. So that for the user DLT, one comment I had still to the you said that information like RSSI and so on is available in different messages and not in the messages. Well, that's because you're looking at the UE.
Yes.
But at the base station side, sort of by definition, you need to know for each and every message the RSSI or other levels, because these are different users, right? On the UE, you only have one user, so you can do it out of band and asynchronously, but on a base station, I think you always have to have it in real time at the packet attached. So I think both are valid cases.
So I had several questions or comments. I agree also like with the segmentation. I also thought about like just using IP there. One of the small topics, let's say, is like I saw like you wanted to add some metadata like a coding scheme for RLC MAC or this kind of stuff. And I have the feeling that's not really needed because you can just infer that from the data. So it could be just adding like more bytes for no real reason. So I just took that example because I know about it, but probably it may happen with other stuff that you showed there. So just raising that point. And then also the question would be whether like pros and cons on using like these per type structs like you show, like the C structs, like with defined fields, like static fields, or whether we should just use some sort of like generic TLV fields and just use a TLV structure. I mean, the cons there, I guess, is just probably like encoding and decoding performance. But other than that, that would probably make it just like more generic and easily to extend into adding new sort of fields. So. Like from extendability point of view, it may make sense. Yeah, performance-wise, I don't know.
Hmm.
Yeah, I mean, it's a difficult question, but in I think at some point in the discussion, we maybe also had this already, somehow have a deja vu, but maybe we didn't have it. If we have the, in the TLV structure, I think it would be very useful to have an indication whether it's an atomic, like a constructed or an atomic or whatever that the usual name is, TLV. So in a sense that, does this TLV contain raw data or does the TLV contain another set of TLVs? And in some TLV encodings, this is called a constructed tag. So in ASIN1, actually, in binary encoding rules, distinguished encoding rules have that. So basically, when you parse the format and you parse the TLV header, you know whether the data is really just data, raw data, or whether the payload is a nested TLV. Right, and this is what the constructed bit basically tells you, and I think that might be interesting if we introduce some new TLV format now to include that and maybe only have a 15-bit tag, but then have one bit that tells us whether the data portion, the value portion of the TLV is itself again a TLV. Right, and then we can have this in a generic way so that even a tool that doesn't know what is this tag about, what is the meaning, but at least it knows there's another structure and it's nested and it continues, so it needs to parse another layer.
Yeah, my point was also that basically some of the fields may actually be like shared, like
microphone.
So my point was only also regarding that some fields may actually be shared between those, even if they are named like differently. But I mean, you showed already in one of the slides like ARFCN, ERFCN, and you just like now name them like channel number, mm-hmm. and that can just be a TLB. So yeah, it's. I don't know, just sure. Mm-hmm. So doesn't mean we need to replicate lots of stuff for each of the sub-protocols and then basically growing in size of the decoder and encoder and all that.
So I guess I'm not sure how much we are in time. Should probably get it concluded at some point, but I mean, I've spent a lot of time with encoding of IPFIX and NetFlow and that kind of stuff. And one of the things I always like there is also is this idea, and I think we had in discussion as well, to have the TLV space in a way that we can have vendor-specific tags, right? So we have like a set of standard things that we did, but then we also provide a mechanism where uniquely additional tags can be added by a vendor without having values that are clashing with another vendor for extensibility. I mean, of course, the stuff that is standardized should be used as it's standardized, but there's always good to have some way how anyone can just extend it. And the way how it's done, I think, in IPFIX and in some other protocols is that they use the IETF or IANA assigned enterprise identifiers. So there's like anyone can just register an enterprise identifier and then you have a magic number and then you basically get a longer tag. It's less efficient encoding, but then still you can add something and say, well, this is SysmoCom tag number 4, and you have your local scope, your local namespace for those tags at that point then. So I think that might be useful.
You can just do that as a nested TLB, like you were saying before.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah, so the comment was that could be done as an nested TLV. But yeah, anyway, I think we should continue this maybe tonight or so and not delay the schedule. Thanks again for taking the initiative. It's been a long time coming, and hopefully we can finish this version before the end of the year.